Sir Richard Ashley, who's going to speak about the benefits of integrated water management. By the way, we've gone over time a bit, but we'll make it up at the end, hopefully. We should have enough time. Thank you.
Right, good afternoon. As Mark said, integrated water management is a huge topic, and I'm going to concentrate primarily on storm or surface water, because I think that's of most relevance in the context that we're speaking today. And the various people on here, I've got Hal Crowes, it should be CH2M Hill, people I've worked with over the last few years on looking at these ideas, particularly in relation to sustainable drainage systems. Now, in England particularly, less so in the rest of the UK, there are two main issues. The first one does apply to the UK as a whole, and that's that we have complex systems of systems. Our urban services, systems, utilities are all complicated in terms of the way they interact. And I've simply put water at the centre of this, and of course it isn't. It depends on where you're coming from as to what is at the centre of what you're doing. Traditionally, as a civil engineer, it's the highways people who've been at the centre, not the water people. And we're beginning to see an erosion of that. I'll say a bit more of that later. So it's complicated. And then secondly, in England, we have too many players. The numbers of players involved in the water system is phenomenal, even without going into these systems of systems. And I've done two studies for OECD in France, looking at their flood management systems. And the UK is second only to France in the complexity of the way it goes about managing these systems. France, of course, doesn't have the privatised services in the same way that we do in England. So there's a lot of people involved, and we've got to find out what the drivers are and try to work together across these boundaries, because the system is not going to change. We're not going to get a change in our institutions and governance that's significant, certainly in the next decade. So how do we actually make it work despite this? Well, it's clear that government, and this, the chair of this, I was on this study over the last winter, the chair of this was a Conservative, and he said this as a conclusion from the inquiry, the report's available on the parliamentary website. But water essentially has a very insignificant political level in England. It doesn't really matter. And importantly, the committee concluded this actually has severe economic impacts, and they did say for the UK, but it's really England. Scotland and Wales are trying to do it better. The other contemporary comment made recently was by Dieter Helm, chair of the Natural Capital Committee, pointing out the importance of proximity of green space in cities. And we've all seen the numbers of health studies that have shown how important this is. London has a major issue with air pollution, for example. Various estimates of the number of deaths that it's responsible for a year. Green space can actually alleviate that. And now we have a whole bunch of stuff coming together. We're at perhaps the most propitious time to start grasping this. As Mark said, we need to actually just say, right, we're going to go out on a limb, we're going to do it. And if you look around the world, and I'll be mentioning a couple of examples, other places have had to go out on a limb. In fact, in Wales, they went out on a limb to really go down the route of sustainable drainage systems. Wales is way ahead of England. We have all this information. I'll be talking a little bit about the Syria water-sensitive urban design stuff, and also the Australian Cooperative Research Centre for Water Sensitive Cities, which I'm part of. We're working, it's a $120 million Australian programme from the Australian government. But of course their drivers are different, I'll say that as we go along. And in the middle, ecosystem services. We have a globally agreed way of valuing ecosystem services now, which we can utilise to do the triple bottom line pounds or dollars sign, as Mark said, in Philadelphia, Center of Neighborhood Technologies, were world leading when they did the triple bottom line for that project. We're now seeing other tools emerging where we can do it. Even in Paris, they're doing it. So what an embarrassment for London, really. Let's face it. But what's the problem? Well, our institutions are not really fit for purpose. We are not putting water high enough up the agenda. The value of water and the things that that water does. We want to create a green city in London. The rainfall is a resource. Are you going to water the new green areas in London from the taps? Oh dear. How naive. But of course, government's done it. We've had the Water Act, the Flood and Water Management Act. So we really should just get on with it. Government's done this and walked on. So it's up to us to get on with it. We have Ofwat, we have charging and competition. So in England, questions we could ask, are the incentives wrong? I wrote the appendix on SUD's retrofit in London for the Tideway study. And in there, I pointed out that it could be done, but that the practicability was so difficult because the incentives are wrong, the numbers of players make it almost impossible. I'm not saying it is impossible, but to do it in a one-er would be impossible. And of course, we saw in the winter of 2013-14 that water was important. Even David Cameron had to admit it was important because it never would go away. And it's only when we get it in the politicians' faces that it's actually going to become significant. But what are the issues in London? Well, and this applies to all of the water bodies, the river, groundwater, and so on, pollution, flooding, resources, and we mustn't forget the decaying assets. We have a wealth of valuable assets under the ground, our water supply mains, our sewers. Unaffordable in terms of maintaining them to cope with the future that's very uncertain. So at the least we need to turn things around and say water is actually an opportunity, it's not a problem. None of these things are actually a problem if you look at it from an opportunity point of view. And blue-green infrastructure gives us that opportunity. Now Syria has coordinated a number of recent reports, which Paul will talk a bit about in the next presentation. But most importantly is the revised SUDS manual, which will come out in October. And it now states, the second point there, surface water runoff should be managed for maximum benefit. The old SUDS manual treated surface water runoff as a problem. The new SUDS manual sees it as an opportunity. So, in the primary guidance, and SUDS manual is a huge volume, if any of you have seen the previous one, that hasn't changed. In the primary guidance, it's slanted towards surface water as an opportunity. In 2011, the mayor, the same mayor, had a wonderful vision with storing the rainwater for later use, using filtration, attenuate water by storing in tanks, by gradual release. And the integration of water management as a whole is central to the success of this strategy. I'm not sure how far we've got. The recent London plan doesn't appear to have taken that very far forward. And the mayor will work with Drain Lab London to manage surface water flood risk and so on. And then our wastewater, we're still going to see it as a problem. Elsewhere in the world, the drivers are different. In Melbourne, there was more than a decade of a drought. And therefore, the drivers were to drive down water consumption, to see water as valuable. And this diagram illustrates, and it's very much the three diagrams that Mark used, and in fact, it's the same author, Tony Wong. Pre-development runoff in Melbourne was around about 145 gigalitres per year. Now, with a paved surface in Melbourne, it's about 608 gigalitres per year, and the water demand is about 435. It just so happens that the excess with the paved area almost exactly matches the water demand. So what did Tony Wong think this meant when he looked at, developed this 5 years ago? Aha, rain falling on Melbourne is a resource. And hence, the CRC for water-sensitive cities was born. And we're working, there must be more than 1,000 researchers working on this project. We're working to try to make that real. But in London, there are other big issues. Housing. Can blue green infrastructure help us with that? Well, it's likely to increase property values. Could be an issue as we want more housing. The population, blue green, will probably attract more people. Do we want that for London? I don't know if that's happening in Philadelphia. But it aids economic growth. People like working in areas where there's green infrastructure. Air pollution, now certainly, improvement in air quality. Heat islands. And one of the biggest drivers in Australia is the urban heat island. It's as big an issue as water shortages. Livability and quality of life brings nature into the city, better environments, enhances mental health. It also allows us to fulfill our regulatory obligations. Safety, resilience. London's one of the 100 resilient cities. I don't see much evidence of it personally, but I'm seeing. Blue-green infrastructure is inherently more resilient, adaptable and flexible. As Mark said, you adapt it as you go along. I'll come back to that one. Asset inertia and path lock-in. We're stuck with 2,000-year-old technology. Surely we could do something better. Crime. Philadelphia, the data suggests that the nicer environments reduce crime. Recreation, more opportunities. Carbon and energy reduces these, helps us to fulfill our obligations. And education, a huge number of opportunities. And we've done it already. I'm sure Jean will talk about this. We actually have world-leading thinking on Thames Estuary 2100. This was developed quite a long time ago, and it's based on a planned adaptation approach. And it's extended the life of the Thames barrier. And essentially it says, if this happens, we will change our path, our course of action, to this one. Big lumps of infrastructure, however, tend to lock you into being stuck with doing the same thing. You can't change. Blue-green infrastructure, because it's dispersed, you can actually modify it much easier. And these are just some of the images of the Watson's Suburban Design in Australia. I'm not going to dwell on that. But this is an image of water-sensitive urban design. It's Olympic Park. Things are happening in London. But are they coordinated? That's the question I think we need to ask. Syria has provided us with some baseline guidance, how this sort of stuff can be translated into UK application. What does a water-sensitive new development look like, for example? The information, the guidance is out there. And as I said, London has this. This is Maysbrook Park. This was justified using ecosystem services valuation. The benefit to cost ratio was about 7-1. 93% of the benefits were cultural services. Cultural services, benefits to local people, and yet it attracted grant. Some of the funding from this was from private sources. But we have a disconnect in the way that we're managing surface water. Our main flooding, flood defence grant in aid, we use ecosystem services in the valuation of the benefits. We've been told by DEFRA this year that in fact, if they're not affordable, not if they create no benefits, if they're not affordable compared with grey infrastructure, developers don't have to use them. A completely wrong message. Now, some of the things Mark was talking about, we're now working, I work in the Netherlands, on a process called mainstreaming. And essentially what this says is, every opportunity to bring this stuff in. For anything, a road scheme, a redevelopment scheme, it should permeate the culture of the organisation running the planning. That's what mainstreaming means. And mainstreaming is a term being used a lot for climate proofing, for adapting areas to cope with climate change. And it's being done. I guess I probably don't have time to go through this in detail, because I've got a few other examples. But it's being done in Hamburg, in Dordrecht, in Rotterdam. And this is what my group and I are working on to bring into the Australian CRC for water sensitive cities. So, for example, in the city of Dordrecht, which is an island up there, it has flood risk from everywhere you can think of. But they're changing urban neighbourhoods as part of regeneration, from road dominated to blue green dominated. This has caused problems with roads people, as you can imagine. But back to Syria, and I'm going up just talking about Syria's new best tool, Benefits of SAS, which I was a part of the team that developed. It was led by MWH. And it actually gives you pound signs as to the multiple benefits of using SAS. And I'll give you a couple of examples. This is Glasgow's Surface Water Management Plan. And the big green circles are the flood risk reduction. So Glasgow Surface Water Management Plan, they're mostly interested in managing flooding, but there are other benefits up there which you can't really see, enabling development, carbon capture, health, amenity, water quality. The two diagrams are simply, the second one is including sensitivity in the analysis, because we're not 100% certain on this. And then you can look across this at the net present value of the scheme and the benefits-cost ratios on the right. So we know the benefit-cost ratio is somewhere between 1.3 and 3.7 for this. Another one is Roundhay Park in Leeds, which is Yorkshire Water. And this is a good illustration of the dilemma that we're faced with. And there are four schemes there. The second from the end, SUDS plus some public area SUDS showed a positive net present value, which is the green bar. See, only one above the line. On the left is the conventional option, which is the grey infrastructure storage system, and this is to control combined sewer overflows, not flooding. Although the green infrastructure one does support flood control, that's why it is a net present value, which is positive. But the conventional option is very much cheaper. So Yorkshire Water, faced with this, should they invest your money in providing all these extra benefits to society? Or should they just go for controlling the combined sewer overflow? And this really is a dilemma that we're faced with. So we need partnerships, because we need other people to bring in the money to allow Yorkshire Water to invest in that. So these are big questions. Who pays? Who gains? Because of the complexity, we need partnerships. So Mark and I are on the same. We didn't collude before this. And there's an issue to do with how we count the benefits. So should a private company, which I've said already, yeah, just get there now. Overall benefits to society. So in the end, this is my last but one slide, or pretty much my last slide. There's never been such good opportunities. We have the tools. We have the analytical tools to do this. We have case examples from everywhere around the world. The Australian project, we're also working with China, Singapore, Rotterdam. I've lost track of the number of other countries we're working with. This is happening globally. The synergies between integrated water management, multifunctional infrastructure, multiple use of land, where it serves more than one purpose, very clear. We can bring disparate systems together, especially land use, urban planning and water. I have a PhD student at Technical University of Delft who's just writing up her PhD. It should be submitted next week, but it's a painful process. She is a planner architect, and she's developed a model that will actually give you information as to where is the most likely place to put blue-green infrastructure in your city in terms of benefit, using planning rules as much as hydraulics. I'm just finishing. These are now the tools to deliver best, they're now the tools to deliver best technologies. You can look at the WaterSense City's website, and I'll just leave you with another US example, uptown normally in Illinois, which actually is a traffic roundabout most of the time. But it's a multifunctional piece of infrastructure. It collects and stores stormwater, it infiltrates it, it reduces heat island effect, and it also absorbs noise. They're very proud of this. They've allowed me to use this image anywhere I like. It's in the New Sudsbury. Thank you.